Not too long ago, I was talking with someone about the miracle of our uniqueness. How we're all formed from, you know, the same general pattern, yet everyone is different. Different eyes, different ears, different hair, legs, arms, hands, fingers, different amounts of body hair. Good things and weird things. But we're all unique in so many different ways. All of these things combine to make each one of us individual, a unique individual, different from those of us that we share our lives with. And then that conversation kind of went on to how about mannerisms and how even those set us apart. We have different ways we use our hands, different facial expressions, different ways we stand, and different ways we hold ourselves. And how we talked about how there seems, with some of those, to be family ties. That sometimes you can recognize family members because they share some of the same mannerisms. So it isn't all just genetics. There is an environmental aspect to mannerisms, and you can recognize family ties. And then we even talked about how, in some cases, the way someone walks is different. The cadence of their steps, the rhythm, heel toe or toe heel, or is there a limp? You know, or that you can tell sometimes, and I've had this happen. You know, usually it's on a hard floor or something. Someone's walking up to you, and you're not looking in their direction, but you kind of know who it is because you recognize the pattern of their walk. That it is a unique feature of their individuality. And it's that walk is going to be the subject of the message today. Because we all have a walk that we're facing as a Christian. When you think about, and on the physical side of this, again, even there is some degree of copycatting. Or one of the things I've seen little children do is they'll try to imitate, or you'll find them imitating. They're walking behind their mom or walking behind their dad, and they're kind of walking in those same footsteps and trying to walk just like their parents, because they're trying in so many different ways as young children trying to emulate their parents. And I thought it would be an interesting topic to research, and it was how the Bible talks about our walk, the ways that we should walk and what we should be doing. And so I'm going to share that with you today as a reminder of things we should be thinking about, and kind of also as one of those things that we can see ties us to the Father and to our brother, because all of our walk ultimately should be an imitation of theirs. So hopefully as we go through these things, you'll have some reminders, as I did when I was studying it, of ways that I'm probably not exactly walking the way that I should. There's a hitch in my giddy-up, however you want to call it, spiritually. And of course, ways where the walk has been generally along in the way that it should have been. There are over 300 scriptures in the Bible that talk about the concept of walking. So it is something that God gives us, uses as an example, something that we can relate to, like so many other things that he uses that make what we should do as a Christian relatable to us as physical human beings. I found essentially two Hebrew words that were translated into some version of walk. One of them is halek, H-A-L-E-K, and that really just talks about the physical act of walking, moving from one place to another. And the other one is yalek, so H and Y just starts with two different letters. Otherwise, the spelling is, they're very close. Let's just say it that way. There's some when you start throwing vowels into Hebrew, different times you see different vowels used in there sometimes when they're writing down a Hebrew word. But essentially, very close to the same word. But that word is more concerned about how you walk, how you carry yourself. Are you walking continually or hesitantly? Are you walking for exercise? Are you marching? Are you leading someone? And then in the New Testament, really just one word again, at least that I found, peripateo. Most of the time it's translated to go to walk or to be occupied with something. It contains the sense of proving that you can walk in the way that's being described, that you can follow the path or the walk of someone else, or you can carry yourself in a certain way, or you can follow a companion. We'll find, as we look at just a few of those 300 scriptures today, if you were all sweating bullets thinking I was going to try to hit all 300 of them, that the Bible many times talks about someone walking in a specific way, and it's used as a description of their character or their relationship with other people. And also that the Bible repeatedly talks about our need to walk with God and to walk as God wants us to walk, to follow his steps. Let's turn to begin with to Exodus chapter 33. Exodus 33, we'll begin reading in verse 12. And then Moses said to the Lord, "See, you say to me, 'Bring up these people,' but you've not let me know whom you will send with me. Yet you have said, 'I know you by name, and you have also found grace in my sight.' Now therefore, I pray, if I have found grace in your sight, show me your way." One of those words that is related to walking. Show me your way. Show me the path. Show me how I should walk, that I may know you and that I may find grace in your sight. Consider that this nation is your people. And God said, my presence will go with you. Again, another reference to moving along, walking beside someone. My presence will go with you and I will give you rest. And then Moses said to the Lord, if your presence does not go with us, do not bring us up from here. For how then will it be known that your people and I have found grace in your sight, except you walk, you go with us? So we shall be separate, your people and I, from all of the people who are upon the face of the earth. So the Lord said to Moses in verse 17, I will also do this that you have spoken, or this thing that you have spoken, for you have found grace in my sight, and I know you by name. We find Moses recognizing that God needed to be with him and God needed to be with Israel if they were going to be successful, if they were going to even survive. And I would imagine that that prayer in some way or another is mimicked by those people in Bangladesh right now, that they know that God has to walk with them if they're going to survive. He says, only if you walk with us will we know and the other nations know that we're different. They didn't mind being different as long as it was God's different. God, Moses was asking God to lead Israel, but to be with them. Not just to be, you know, essentially like a figurehead or something off in the distance that you can kind of aim for, but walk with us, be with us as we make this journey. And in one way or another, I hope that that's part of our prayers regularly. Not just asking God to direct you, but to walk with you, to be by your side. That you recognize that we all recognize that if he isn't, if he's distant from us, our chances of slipping up and making a mistake and walking in the wrong direction, or taking a detour on that path, become greater and greater the longer he isn't and we aren't yearning for him to be right there beside us. Moses understood that it was a fundamental principle. If God wasn't walking with them, their chances of success were not good. And if God isn't walking with us, our chances of success are not good. Walking, how we do that is going to be the subject of this message. Different ways that we can walk with God. Because it is important that we understand And we have this Bible, and we have these verses that talk to us about ways in which that's supposed to happen. Turn to Leviticus chapter 26. We live in a world that is not walking with God and gets farther and farther away from even having being able to see him in the distance as they live their lives. And we certainly don't want that to be us. Leviticus chapter 26, and we're going to begin reading in verse 3, and I'm going to read a fairly long section of this scripture. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them, then I will give you rain in season. The land will yield its produce. The trees of the fruit shall yield their blessing. Your threshing shall last till the time of vintage, and the vintage shall last till the time of sowing, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely, and I will give peace in the land, and you will not, or you shall lie down, and no one will make you afraid. I will rid the land of evil beasts, and the sword will not go through your land. You will chase your enemies, and they will fall by the sword before you. 500 of you will chase, or 5 of you will chase 100, and 100 will put 10,000 to flight. For I will look on you favorably and make you fruitful, multiply you, confirm my covenant with you. You will eat the old harvest and clear out the old because of the new. You will have, he's saying there'll be so many blessings that come from this that you'll be blessed. I will set my tabernacle among you. My soul will not abhor you, and I will walk among you and be your God, and you will be my people. All of this, all of everything we just read, had one condition on it. One condition, one requirement. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them. This promise wasn't and isn't just for the nation of Israel. Like all of God's promises, he keeps it simple. There isn't this complicated process. He says, if you will commit yourself to keeping my commandments, walking in the statutes, walking in all of these things that I've given you for examples and given you direction to do, if you do that, I promise that I will walk with you as well. Promise that I will walk with you as well. And it was a promise to them, and it is a prophecy for those that follow them. God doesn't change. He doesn't change in how he works his relationship with his people. Now we'll turn to Philippians chapter 3. And we'll begin reading in verse 15. Philippians 3:15. Therefore, let us, as many as are mature, have this mind, and if in anything you think otherwise, God will reveal even this to you. Nevertheless, to the degree that you have already attained, let us walk by the same rule. Let us be of the same mind. Brethren, join in following my example. And note those who also walk this way, as you have us for a pattern. Paul is using that walking, following, going together reference repeatedly in these few verses in his instruction and his encouragement of how the Philippians should live their life. Walk according to these principles. Look around you for those who are also walking according to those principles and walk with them. That walking together, he even recognizes, brings us together, unites us, because we're going on the same path, in the same direction, trying to follow the same laws, the same way of life. There's certainly an aspect of this that should speak to each congregation. It definitely speaks to us as individuals, but it should also speak as congregations. These people are who God has given us in one form or another to walk with right now. Hasn't been our whole life, won't be necessarily the rest of our life. But right now, these are who we should be walking with. Grand Rapids has done a great job over the years of using the Sabbath day as a way to build bonds between people, with the food and the fellowship and the length of time that everybody stays afterwards. And it's better than we have a blessing in that we're able to do that here, and a blessing that people have recognized it and value that. But it's hard for the rest of the week to keep any kind of that relationship going. And it is something that's easy to forget. We get into our jobs, or we get into our routine. But the more that we can make an effort to walk with each other, even occasionally during the course of the week, the better we will be. You will benefit if you do that. The person that you're reaching out to will benefit as well. Let's continue reading in verse 18. For many walk, of whom I've told you often, and now tell you even weeping, that they have become enemies of the cross of Christ, whose end is destruction, whose God is their belly, whose glory is in their shame, who set their mind on earthly things. Becomes more and more stark as every week goes by that most of the people you run into in the world don't even have a semblance of following the same walk as we should be following as Christians. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't build relationships with them, because we are supposed to be a light to them. We are supposed to be an example for them. But it says something if all of your best friends are outside of the church. And it's something that each one of us, if we're in that situation, we should evaluate why that is. And I'm not going to say they're just point blank, that's horrible and you're a bad person if that's the case, but it's something we should all evaluate, because they cannot walk the same path that we are called to walk. I mentioned, as in the introduction to this, that there are many different characteristics of how someone walks physically, and there are a number of qualities of our walk as a Christian that are also discussed in the Bible. And we're going to look at some verses that talk about some of these characteristics, and again, should be a reminder, it should be a time for us to analyze and make sure that we are walking according to what God has given us, told us to do in the Bible. We've already read that we need to know and we need to understand his commandments. We should make choices based on that knowledge. That's what we read in Leviticus 26. Turn to 2 John now. Second John, verse 6. I'm not going to tell you the chapter. See if you can figure it out when you get there. 2 John, verse 6. This is love, that we walk according to his commandments. This is the commandment that you have heard from the beginning, that you should walk in it. One of the characteristics of this walk is love. This is love, that you walk according to those commandments. And we're told there that it's what God has said from the beginning. He hasn't changed, and love didn't just spring up when Christ came here to be as part of what all Christians or our followers walk. It's always been a part of the relationship. And what we find in this and other verses is that one of the primary ways that we show our Father that we truly love him is by showing that we have a complete commitment to walk according to his way. There's a really cool country song. It's a few years old now, but it's the story of a kid who does different things, both good and bad. And when he was asked why, his response was, I want to be like you, Dad. I want to walk just like you walk. That's one of the greatest compliments that we can give our Father, is to show him that we've made that commitment, that we love him so much, that even when following in that walk isn't the easy thing for us, we're still committed to walking that way. Christ really said the same thing. If you love me, keep my commandments. And it's certainly easy to say, yes, I love God. Yes, I'm committed to walking in his way, but we've talked about it before. The making it happen part of our life is when it becomes difficult. We have a heart that wants to. We have a brain that most of the time wants to, although we talk ourselves out of it sometimes. But it's the practice. It's when we get distracted and we get tempted that it isn't easy. We keep his commandments until we don't. Right? I mean, we're perfectly obedient until we're not. And our job, our goal, our prayer, one of them should be that the until you're not becomes fewer and fewer, that you commit more, your heart is given more, your character is shaped more by your love for God, and so you begin and continue to minimize those times when you find the "and you're not" happening to you. We should regularly ask ourselves, am I really walking with God, or am I walking in the general direction that God is? Am I really following more or less a straight line path, or is my path just all over the place? You know, there's a week where I'm right in step with him and mimicking, and then the next week I'm off in this field trudging over here somewhere and hoping that I can find my way back once I figure out how far off I am from that walk. And ask ourselves, why does that happen? The only way to make things different is beginning by asking that question, why? Why did it happen? How did I get to this place? How did my commitment that I have made and make repeatedly, how did I shirk that and forget that and do this? One of the characteristics of our walk with God is that it at its foundation has to be that love. And the stronger that love is, I believe, the easier it is to walk in his footsteps, at pace with him. Let's turn to Psalms chapter 26. This is another example of a characteristic of our walk. 26, and again, almost the whole chapter. Beginning in verse 1, Psalms 26. Vindicate me, O Lord, for I have walked in my integrity. I have also trusted in the Lord. I will not slip. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Prove me, try my mind and my heart. For your loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in your truth. I have not sat with idolatrous mortals, nor will I go in with the hypocrites. I've hated the assembly of evildoers, and I will not sit with the wicked. I will wash my hands in innocence, and I will go. So, or in that way, in with that preparation, I will go about your altar, that I may proclaim with a voice of thanksgiving and tell of all your wondrous works. Lord, I have loved the habitation of your house. I've loved living in your presence and the place where your glory dwells. Do not gather my soul with sinners, nor my life with bloodthirsty men in whose hands is a sinister scheme and whose right hand is full of bribes. But as for me, I will walk in my integrity. Redeem me and be merciful to me. Walk in integrity, or walk with integrity. An interesting phrase that he repeats at the first, in the first verse we read and the last verse that we read. And it's interesting, again, to try to read what commentators have to say about this. The best description that I found of what was being said here is that it means to walk without wavering. To walk without wavering. When we walk, we have choices. We have choices that we can make. Choices that will either keep us walking in God's footsteps, keep God walking with us, or, as we just talked about, lead us out into a field somewhere. David said he didn't just try to live righteously, but he chose not to expose himself to wrong influences. He said, I stay away from these people that are like this. And he lists several characteristics in here of people. He said, I try to stay away from those kind of people. He recognized the power of influence, how people can influence you one way or the other. And the choices you make of who you walk with can influence what that walk looks like. And again, it gets back to making choices of who we're walking with, who we're spending most of our time with. And it's not just people. You know, influences come from all over the place. Influences come from what's on your tablet, what's on your phone, what news feed you're paying attention to, what programs you're watching on TV, what movies you go to, what books you read. All of those are influences. And few of them are neutral. Few of them are really neutral influences. They will either help influence you in one direction or influence you in another, or in some aspect of your character or your life, or in some choice that you have to make. And the psalmist, David, is just recognizing, I'm going to do what I can to limit the influence that something that takes me away from God can have on me. David says, I just choose to walk away from those. So again, one of the characteristic that we've just talked about is, I like that, I walk in my integrity, or I walk without wavering. That our walk should be as much as possible one without wavering. Next characteristic of that walk is, we're going to begin addressing in Proverbs chapter 28. Proverbs 28, verse 18. Whoever walks blamelessly will be saved. But he who is perverse in his ways, or in the way that he walks, will suddenly fall. Whoever walks blamelessly, whoever walks in a way that other people can't see obvious ways that we aren't walking with God. Someone who walks where people say there's something different, something special, something good about that person. The way they're living their life. They might say, I couldn't do that. But they still recognize that there's something good about the way you are living your life, the choices you are making, the walk that you are taking. Walk blamelessly. I've always thought about that when we're resurrected and given responsibility for other people, and we reveal, which I assume at some point we'll be with people that we've met in this life, we reveal who we are, and someone says, really? that's not the response I want to get from them when I tell them who I am. What was so special about you? You were just like me. I didn't see you were any different than anybody else that we were around. I don't want that to be the case, and we shouldn't either. And by focusing on walking blamelessly, I think we help push ourselves beyond that negative comparison. You know, Job was described as being blameless in his walk. That didn't mean that he was without sin, because God obviously pointed out something to, that Job needed to recognize, where he was. He did have a sinful attitude in one aspect of his life. But as far as the way that he was viewed in the area that he was in, and even the way Satan viewed him, Satan didn't go there accusing Job, because he didn't really find, from the story, things that he could accuse Job of. He didn't know Job's sin. All he did was say, God said, look at how awesome Job is. Don't you think he's doing a pretty great job? And Satan just said, well, I can change that. Job walked in a way that was a shining light to the people around him. And that should be one part of our prayer, that we do that same thing, that we walk blamelessly. It's important that we try to make that walk 100% with God, right? We do all we can to follow in every footstep, every way along the way. Amos 3:3, where we won't turn there, I think it's a familiar scripture for people. It says, can two be in agreement unless they, excuse me, can two walk together unless they're in agreement? And so that, again, gets back to a question that I try to ask myself, have been trying to ask myself more as I've thought about this. Am I really walking in agreement with God? Big picture, overall view of my life, is that what's happening? So again, one of those qualities, walk blamelessly. Walk in a way that does not bring shame to God's name, to your name. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 5. We'll look at another aspect. 2 Corinthians chapter 5. Very simple verse, very simple phrase, I mean, in verse 7. For we walk by faith, not by sight. We must walk by faith, in faith. Israel had many times through the course of their wandering in the wilderness where they could actually see a manifestation of God's presence. They saw him in the cloud by day, the pillar by night. They saw him in the manifestation of his presence filling the Holy of Holies. There are other Old Testament personalities that we find where God clearly and plainly spoke to them, where they heard, if you want to say that, their mind at least communicated with God, and God communicated with them directly. We don't have that most of the time. 99% of our existence, at least, we don't have God speaking directly into your mind and telling and having a conversation with you. We don't have those physical proofs that God is walking with us. But we do have times where we can feel that. I certainly know that there have been times in prayer where a thought comes to mind, comes when that I know didn't just pop out of my brain, where I feel very strongly that God did actually communicate that thought, put that thought in my mind as an answer or a direction or something else to think about. But most of our walk has to be a walk based on faith, where we don't see physical proof. So, but we have to continue, even without physical proof, confident in the promises that God has made, that we find in his word. Confident that he is walking with us, doing everything that he can to help us to continue to walk with him. Christ said, I will never leave you or forsake you. And we need to have faith that that's actually, that Christ wasn't lying. Because there's times when I know where we wonder whether we deserve to have him be with us. Whether we're so far off the path that maybe he has turned his back. And we have to remember his promise. Never. And if we can keep that, if we can have the faith that that is true, I believe very strongly that that helps us walk the way that we should. Helps us when the path is kind of rocky and difficult. Walking in faith doesn't mean walking in the belief that we're always making the right choices because we've asked God to lead us. Maybe I should say that again. Walking in faith doesn't mean that we should walk in the belief that we always make the right choice if we ask God to lead us. Just because we ask God to lead us doesn't mean we're actually following him. Doesn't mean that we're following, going through on our part. He certainly is willing to lead us. And most of the time, when we've asked God to lead us, we really don't know whether we were being allowed ourselves to be led until afterwards, until we see the fruits of whatever we're facing that we were asking for help with. That's the way we know whether we were walking in that path or not, is by what was produced. Whether we were led to righteousness or to trouble. Walking in faith means knowing that we're never walking alone. Regardless of how hard things are, regardless of what's going on, knowing that we're never alone, knowing that there will always be a path that will allow us to walk with God if we choose that path. If we do everything we can to walk with God and we commit ourselves to that. We can always get back. We must walk in faith. Turn to Ephesians chapter 5. This is kind of a restatement of one of the points we've already made. I guess maybe it's just maybe once you see it, you'll think it's important. Ephesians chapter 5, beginning in verse 1. Therefore, be imitators of God as dear children. Kind of like what I was talking about how children want to follow and they want to mimic their parent. He's saying, be like that. Be like that. Be so in awe of your father, of your older brother, that you just want to be just like them. That you want to walk exactly the way that they walk. And then he continues in verse 2 and says, and walk in love. As Christ, and he says as Christ also has loved us, but what he's really saying is, walk in love like Christ did. Christ walked in love. He sacrificed himself in love. He taught them in love. He set an example for us in love. He walked in love. As Christ also has loved us and given himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling aroma. Look at how God walks. Look at how Christ walks. It was funny. I don't remember what I was watching, something on TV. But the question came up, what would Jesus do? You know, for a long time ago, that was the big deal, right? That was something that went around in Christian circles. What would Jesus do? And there were bracelets and all kinds of things that people tried to use to help them remember as best they could. We don't need bracelets to remember that should be a question that we ask ourselves. What would Christ do? How would Christ walk in this situation? What would his response be? What would his action be? How would he express the love that was who he is in this situation? And I think one of the ways that we can do that is actually thinking about that before we're in a position where we need to make a decision how we should walk. Think about, use your imagination. Think about a situation that maybe you go into your past, or maybe you go into your worries for the future. That's something that might happen. How, if it happens, how would Christ walk? Maybe not a bad meditation topic, because we're supposed to be doing that as well as praying and studying. How would Christ, how would God the Father walk in this situation? And how would he express that love through the course of that, through his walk? Because we see in Christ's example that his love didn't stop when it became difficult. His love didn't stop when it became time for self-sacrifice. And a lot of times, certainly in the world and certainly our carnality, that's where we want to stop. We can love to a point, express love to a point, but when it gets a little too uncomfortable, too hard, there's maybe too much of a requirement on us, or we think it's too much of a requirement on us, to really express love, we back off. And of course, Christ's walk, he didn't back off when that became the case. Up to the ultimate physical self-sacrifice, physical act of love. Christ was walking with God, loved God's presence and God's guidance so much that he was able to make that sacrifice. We must walk in love. Turn to Romans chapter 8 for the next quality. I think I'm doing okay time-wise, all right? Yeah, not bad. Romans chapter 8, we'll read verse 1. There is therefore now no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus, who do not walk according to the flesh, but walk according to the Spirit. We must walk in God's Spirit, allowing ourselves to be influenced through God's Spirit. It says, there is no condemnation for those who are in Christ, or those who are with Christ, who walk according to the Spirit, who walk being led, allow themselves to be led. Christ led a sinless life. And because of that, he was the only physical human being who never had the judgment of death on his head. Paul's saying that because of Christ's life, if we walk so closely to him that we seem as one, if we allow Christ to be as much a part of us and live in us, that we walk in lockstep, his life can provide freedom from condemnation. There is no condemnation for those who walk in lockstep with Christ. Maybe that's the shorthand version of what Paul just said. There's a unity that's needed there and is necessary there. And it's God's Spirit that makes that unity possible. It's where God's Spirit comes into this whole concept of being able to walk. It's what unites us. It's what ties our minds together. It's how we can be influenced and reminded. Actually, you know, there are some translations who actually say who are led according to the Spirit or through God's Spirit. But it is a leading as well, right? It isn't God standing behind us and pushing us along the path, you know, taking us and shoving us around. He's the one that is out front. Christ went before us, and we have to follow, and we have to make the choices that allow us to follow. But again, walk in the Spirit. One final one, actually, of this message. Turn to Ephesians chapter 4. Chapter 4 will begin in verse 1 of Ephesians. I, therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of your calling, of the calling with which you were called, with all lowliness and gentleness and longsuffering, bearing with one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. We must walk worthy of our calling. Paul is reminding them, and by extension reminding us, that while we're in this world, we have a different purpose from those around us. We have a calling that most of the people that we come into contact with do not have right now. We are chosen for something different right now. And that creates a responsibility for each one of us to walk in a way that shows that we understand the blessing of being called and the responsibility of being called. And they, you know, this ties in with all those other things about being a light and being an example. We didn't choose, God chose. But we then, because of that choice, need to walk worthy of that calling. Moses wished that God hadn't called on him. He tried as much as he could to shove the responsibility off on somebody else. He didn't want to confront Pharaoh. He didn't want to lead Israel. But he was chosen. Solomon wasn't confident that he could lead Israel. But he was chosen. Christ hoped, wished, asked that if there was a different way than having to do what he knew was coming, that he'd be able to do it. But he was called for that purpose, called to that purpose. And I guess even to that point, chosen, because the Father and Christ, one of them had to be the one that would do that. The Father and the Word, I guess I should say. And one of my favorite lines in a musical from Fiddler on the Roof, some of you may know it, the lead character, says, you know, who is a Jew, suffering persecution, having a difficult time, and one of his soliloquies is, I know we're the chosen people, but couldn't you choose someone else once in a while? And I think we probably all feel that way sometimes with our calling. But ultimately, we have to come back to the fact that we have been chosen. We do have a calling. And our walk should be one that is worthy of the great gift and honor that we've been given. Will you walk in a way that where God will say, you made good choices. You made good choices. You did a good job. You weren't perfect, but I never expected you to be perfect. But you made good choices. And here you are. Here we are. Look at what verses 2 and 3 talk about. Ways that our calling, we can walk worthy of our calling. By being humble, by being gentle, by being long-suffering. By loving the people that God has called us with, even though they are far from perfect. By working to remain united rather than allowing division to separate us. By working, making sacrifices so that peace is how we exist together. These scriptures, these examples, these qualities of how we should walk are just a small token. If you're looking for a Bible study, just read all of the words that talk about walk or path or step or any other word related to that you can think of. Get out your concordance and look at what the actual word is and find all the ways words where that word is used, where it isn't necessarily said walk, but something related to that. And see how important God finds this concept of walking with him is to God. We've got one final passage we're going to read. Turn to Psalms chapter 23. One of the probably the most familiar psalms that there is. One, we have three or four now hymns based on this chapter 23. But it shows again how in sync David was with what he needed to do, how he needed to live his life, and what God provided for him. We're just going to read some of this, but we won't read the whole thing. Well, maybe. If I get to the end and I feel like it, we may read the whole thing. It's short. The Lord is my shepherd, I will not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil because you are with me. You are walking with me. Your rod and your staff give me comfort. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. He understood who should lead him, whose walk he should be mimicking. Do we believe as deeply as David did that that's who we should follow and how we should follow? Do we honor God in the way that David did for the help that he gives us, for the direction that he gives us? In your prayers, do you go to the extent, anywhere, even try to approach the extent that David did when you thank God for helping you, for leading you, for directing you? Is it that resonant emotionally, resonant with you emotionally, that you feel the need to praise God and honor God that way for the walk that he's put us on, that he's put you on, and the direction that he gives you, the way that he leads you? God asks us to walk with him through our life, through the life he has given us. He is essentially like that parent holding out his hand for a child, one of his children, just offering, take my hand. Walk with me. Follow me. Are you accepting that hand? Are you reaching up and grabbing God's hand and walk and doing everything you can to walk with him in this life, looking up to him, honoring and respecting him, trying to mimic him as you do that? God reaches out his hand. Will you, are you reaching up to take it?